Virtus is the Latin word for manliness, but it also implies excellence and courage. Welcome to Virtus, a show dedicated to inspiring and cultivating virtue, character, courage, excellence, manliness, and honor. I am your host, Bo Hutchess.
All right, guys, welcome back to Virtus, the podcast where we're talking about excellence. Latin word for virtue. Virtus is the word for manliness, excellence, character, and all that stuff. And that's what we're talking about. And today on the line, I've got Scott Tungay. Just met this brother and excited to have this conversation. So, Scott, welcome to the show. And how you doing? Yeah,
thanks, Bo. Doing really well, man. It's great to be on with you.
Awesome. So, Scott, why don't you just give us a bio of yourself? Who are you and what are you about?
Yeah, man, I was born in South Africa, fourth generation British settlers down there, and kind of like a upper middle class family. My dad had his own business, and we grew up in a really rural area. Had a lot of land to play on as a little boy, which was a wonderful upbringing.
Oh yeah.
But we weren't a Christian family, so I was raised in a very liberal frame, and kind of had this desire as a young boy to really be Mr. Rainbow Nation. You know, South Africa had gone through that whole changeover from apartheid to total democracy. And we were all brainwashed to, really think like, wow, this is amazing. This is the greatest thing ever. And I wanted to be a huge part of that and be Mr. Rainbow Nation, and make sure that this country succeeded and whatnot. And so through all of that, upbringing in a multicultural, very liberal, situation setting, there would be tons of things in my life that would just not click, whether it was gender roles that, people would say like, oh, girls can do anything a guy can do. And it's like, well, there's very obvious things that are going on in your life, but you put a mask up and you're like, no, it's true. Even though the facts are different, and same with multiculturalism, people are like, oh, all the cultures are the same. And, in South Africa, there's like 15 different tribes, including the two white tribes, the Afrikaners and the English. And each tribe has very different aims, very different values, And so as a little English boy, I would expect every other tribesman to be an Englishman on the inside, just treat them like, oh, there's an Englishman waiting to jump out. And it's like, that never happened. And it's almost like, man, like that is just so, it's so arrogant to expect other people to act, according to your values. Mm-hmm. And then you get mad when they don't, and you're like, oh, why is it happening? And it's like, and again, you have to put up all these little brainwash things that you don't really realize are brainwashing until you start hearing other people say it back to you. But things like, well, diversity is a strength.
Right.
It's like, okay, but it wasn't in that moment, when you can't talk to anyone because you can't speak the same language. And I just offended him because my values are different to his values. And he just took my thing. And like, there's so much that just South Africa was just an amazing experiment in liberal utopian, top down cookie cut stamping, like this is what the truth is, and like life just won't care, won't do what the truth wants, But that being said, it took me a long time to ever admit that. So I got saved as a teenager into a very charismatic type church environment, which was great. I'm really thankful for that. I think once you've experienced the charismatic or Pentecostal realm, nothing really shocks you anymore.
Right.
So I'm very glad for that.
Yeah.
But again, this whole thing of upholding the liberal worldview, of where the Bible contradicts with liberalism, we explain and justify liberalism away. Mm-hmm. We explain it so that, well, as Christians, we're supposed to just love them and just, the Bible, it's contextual and all this stuff, So that was a whole different frame and paradigm. So it wasn't until I was in my early 20s, and obviously as young men, what are we interested in? It's sex and money and status.
Yeah.
And so you start asking like, well, where are the Christian dudes speaking on this? And it's like, well, that's a no-no, because if there's Christian guys speaking on it, in order to speak on those things, you have to do it in a liberal frame. So how do you talk about sex? It's, well, you got to serve the ladies and be a nice guy, the Christian nice guy. I even remember reading a book as a teenager of something about like no more Christian nice guy. And it's like, he was trying to hint at something. And it's like, even that book, if I had to go back and read it now, it'd probably be super cringe.
Yeah, right.
And then you think about money and it's like, oh guys, you know, we shouldn't have money and we shouldn't have power. We shouldn't have institutional power. We shouldn't have political power. And so you're just like beaten down into the liberal ascendancy. The liberals are ascendant over the Christians. And so as a young guy, it's just like, man, like I want the truth. I want to know why what I see in front of me is so different to what's being told to me is the truth. And that's when you start dabbling in the backroom forums and the taboo websites. And, you know, you start getting into the whole red pill pickup artist type of forums, you know, not from a point of wanting to go and be a degenerate, right, but from a point of wanting to know, like, I want to know about sex. I want to know about money. I want to know about the true gritty realities of life that no one's telling me.
And these are the guys doing it, right?
Exactly. They're the guys doing it, you know, and they're speaking without shame, often anonymously. And it's like, wow, there's no real counter of a Christian style of anything like that. And so it was a real hard kind of place for me of like really wanting to have someone to talk to about these things, having someone to disciple me into these things. But whenever you arrive back at church, you have to be politically correct. You have to say the yeses to the liberal worldview. And so you can't even think about bringing up, you know, anything to do with sex, race, money, status, anything like that. So that was just like a really hard season for me of really going into this thing of like, God, am I the broken one? Like, am I the shameful, like, I wish I could just turn this all off and just be a good boy.
Yeah.
You know, and you internalize all this not fitting in as your own fault, you know, and not wanting to go along with the zeitgeist as your own fault.
Mm.
So that was my early 20s. And then I think I married an American girl. She was over in South Africa on a mission trip, and that's how we met. And we've been married almost 5 years now. And I think once you get married, your life really changes. You know, as millennial boys, we've been prolonged into our adolescence, you know, into our 20s, maybe even, you know, however long you can prolong it. But once you get married, you're like, oh, I can't hide my immaturity anymore because I've got a woman living with me who sees my little boy life. And all my insecurities and all my shame and all my, you know, not shame from a sexual point or shame from a hidden sin point, but shame from a point of all of these insecurities that I've been carrying for my life, that I've been hiding from everyone else. Your wife as a helpmeet actually pushes you to be brave, pushes you to be a man of integrity and a man of strength of like, well, if we can talk about these things, let's start talking with other people about these things. And so I think being married, you know, like number one, you're not so worried about being rejected by girls in a church. If you get kicked out of a church, it's like, well, I don't need the girls anymore because I've got a girl.
Right.
And it also, I think it does make you more wanting to be a brave man. You know, there's a famous line from some missionary, I think in China somewhere, but they were threatening to kill the all the Chinese missionaries. And the wife stood up and said, I'd rather be married to a dead man than a coward.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just like, that is an amazing, that's one of the amazing gifts of a wife, is that it often amplifies your own courage.
Mm.
You know, when you have a helpmeet who's happy to see you go hard at things. So yeah, man, it's, you know, so we're living in America now. We're up in Indiana area and rural, loving the rural area, loving rural America. Just got such a heart for almost, you know, seeing ourselves as missionaries to America. Because no one wants to touch, you know, Rust Belt America, rural America, from a point of they don't need it. You know, they're fine. They're a Christian nation, whatever. And it's like, no, there's white boys blowing their heads out on meth and despair and nihilism. And, you know, the whole world hates them. They've been told they're evil. And so for me, I'm like, whoa, like, what's the gospel to these guys? You know, how do we tell the good news to these guys? And, you know, in Africa, to be a missionary, you go and dig a well and you make a food kitchen and a clinic and a school. That doesn't really work in America. You know, we don't need those physical needs. To be a missionary in America, it's far more, it's honesty. You know, no one's been honest with these young men and told them that actually, like, there's good news for the poor. There's good news for the brokenhearted. We have a warrior king who has a mission for us. There's meaning and purpose to this life. And so that's, yeah, that's a little bit of where I'm at right now and where I've come from.
That's great. I love it. And for all the guys listening, Scott, will you give us just your YouTube channel that you do all your content on?
Yeah, my personal YouTube is Scott Tungay. Just type that in on YouTube. I do a live stream every weekday. And then my wife and I actually do videos together at Scott and Kelly, and that's K-E-L-L-I. And we do a bunch of videos on home economy, on dating and marriage, on, you know, just kind of like trying to figure out the culture for young mm-hmm. Teenage Christians trying to figure out what's going on.
Totally. Yeah. There's such a lack of just discipleship, and not even in a necessarily Christian sense, you know, just a parenthood sense.
Yeah.
So many people just, you know, what is a budget? How do you change your oil? How do you even buy a house? You know,
yep.
All these things, yep. No one's talking about this.
Practical wisdom.
That's right. So all you guys really need to go check out Scott and his YouTube channel. You do that, what, a couple times a week, live stream?
Yeah. Every weekday normally.
If
things allow. Yep.
Awesome. And what I love about you, Scott, is you're not from America originally. And I feel like, you know, even if conservatives, you know, say they love America, you know, the liberal media is really, and I think have done a pretty good job basically trying to make us hate our country, right?
Yeah.
It's just, we should like feel guilty, you know, for growing up here. And one of the things that one of your perspectives is you love this place, you know, it's really like refreshing, you know, because everything you see is just, you know, you can be somewhat thankful for being in America, but you really need, you know, the overall emotion needs to be hatred, you know, of your country. And so it's just cool to hear your perspective and just how you have, how you look at things and approach life here in the States. So, yeah.
Yeah, man. You know, I often say to guys, you know, because a lot of people will be like, oh, where are you from? I'm like Africa. And they're like, oh, and I'm like, dude, I'm pumped to be here. I'm so grateful for this country. And a lot of people will be like, really?
Yeah, seriously.
You know? And it's like, you know, go to Africa for 1 week and you'll come back and kiss the ground.
Right.
And it's like, people don't understand just what it means to live in a place that has peace, that has prosperity. You know, a lot of guys they hit hard of like the prosperity gospel is evil. And it's just like, it's not the prosperity gospel. You know, every culture on earth wants peace and prosperity for their children. That's a really easy, natural thing. We want peace and prosperity. What we mean by that is not slavery, not poverty, mm-hmm. not violence.
Right.
You know, we want to avoid that. And America, like, that's the American dream. You know, is that you get these third world hell holes where poverty and violence is the norm. You know, poverty and violence is the norm of sinful man.
Right.
And so to escape poverty and violence and arrive in America and you're like, man, you know, my first week in America, my wife took me out to a park and we sat on a bench and I just like had reverse culture shock, like all the trauma and PTSD of living in a violent and impoverished place.
Mm.
I was just like, oh my gosh, like, I don't have to look over my back every now and then. Right. I don't have to have an exit route.
Yeah.
I don't have to lock the car. I don't have to watch out for my bag. I don't, like, all these habits that we've been trained to by living in violence. That's not the case here in America. And it's like a lot of people just take for granted that, you know, if we didn't watch the news, we wouldn't know that all this bad, evil stuff was happening and kids are being kidnapped and violence in the streets. And right, like, you wouldn't know. You know, majority of people, like, we live a wonderful existence in the rural areas, especially the small towns, you know, especially where it's homogenous and, you know, the culture is very clear. It's like everyone gets along, polite society. And it's like, it's a wonderful world. But yeah, then you turn on CNN and it's like, today, 55 people died because of white terrorism. And it's like, really? This place sucks.
Yeah, seriously. It's all going to hell. Yeah. No, that's great. I love that. So from watching, you know, your videos, let me just give you and everyone listening just kind of your rap sheet, just from my perspective. So you're, you know, South African, you talk about nationalism, the big scary word, nationalism, you know, talk about Christianity, patriarchy, masculinity, you're a gardener, you do cultural commentary, talk about finding your gift and your domain, localism, hierarchy. That's a lot of stuff.
That's a great
So if you could, like, you know, summarize, you kind of touched on it, you know, with you and your wife, but, you know, your mission statement in life, you know, with all these things, you know, what's the statement? What's the desire? Yeah. You know, what are you about, I guess?
Yeah, I think I want to give a positive vision to young Christian men in the West, you know, so whether that's anywhere in the Anglosphere, I mean, I'm speaking English, I'm an Anglo, African Anglo. And so whether that's America, you know, Europe, Australia, South Africa, whatever it is, but anyone who can understand English and is living in a Western, you know, post-liberal clown world, I want to give Christian men a positive vision. I want to give them a practical outworking of, you don't have to live in despair. You don't have to live in nihilism. You don't have to live in political correctness and the trap. You know, we've all been there at some point in our life, and some of us are still in that place, you know, of nihilism and despair. And I want to somehow give a positive vision of, chaps, we can have an amazing life, you know, build a family, crush in our dominion, of our domain, you know, build something that God really wants to birth through each of us is our own calling into our own domain. You know, so a lot of guys think the only way I can please the Lord is to go be a pastor or go be a missionary. And it's like, guys, there's so many other things. What is the passion and the talent that God has put on your life to go do? You know, some guys that's business, some guys that's media, some guys that's government, you know, many different ways. And it's like, we need to go and see that that is a place where we can go and be the image of Christ in those places and take ground, extend dominion, and absolutely find meaning, find belonging, find purpose, you know, find just the zest of life, of like, life is worth living, you know, and we're in a cultural war. So stop hiding, stop ignoring, stop denying, and let's start crushing.
Amen. Yeah, that's what we need. That's right. And one of the things that, you know, as a pastor, I love and hate, you know, I mean, if you've ever preached a sermon, somebody or a handful of people are going to tell you, that's a great sermon. You know, some people might even tell you, that's the best sermon I've ever heard. And you hear that every Sunday, you know, but the average guy working in his, you know, auto mechanic shop or, you know, running his cattle, he doesn't get told good job, right?
Yeah.
When he makes the business, when he makes a sale, it's never, you know, great job. And I feel like the church has just become such a soft environment to where the expected thing receives all this praise, to where the expected thing in any other, you know, area of life is just, okay, well then go on to the next. You made this sale, go on to the next. You know, you fixed this engine, go on to the next. And that's one of the things I've really struggled with, you know, with in the church is this really, you know, uplifting of spiritual things to where, I mean, we say that there's no divide between, you know, secular and sacred, but we still kind of live that way.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Great. You know, helping men try to, you know, crush where they're at and be successful and do the things and see that as a calling from the Lord. You know, it's not second class thing.
And see themselves as the Lord's guy. You know, I love that saying of like, you're my top guy. And it's like, we need to see Jesus saying that to each of us.
Yeah.
Of like, man, if you're a mechanic, if you're a bank clerk, if you're, you know, whatever your current position of like, you're my guy. And it's like, okay, I'm God's guy, you know? And it's like, how do I crush in this place? And for a lot of us, like maybe you are in the place where, you know, this is my calling. This is the thing I'm excited about. I'm passionate about. I've got skill here. And I can build status. I can build honor in this thing for the glory of the Lord, to the glory of the Lord, and to the service of my tribe, of my community. And I think for a lot of guys, you know, we know that we're not in that domain. And so for a lot of guys, like maybe, you know, so for instance, I was working in the hospitality industry for a while and it's like, I was just crushing my soul, you know, grinding my soul into the dust. And it's like, I want to do a good job here. I want to serve the Lord. And so you listen to sermons on like how to be blessed in the marketplace, how to be a millionaire for the Lord in the hospitality industry, you know, and you believe these things. You're like, Lord, am I not fasting enough? Am I not holy enough? Is there some sin I don't see? Because this sucks.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, dude, sometimes we're not in the right domain. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's like, like for the longest time, God has been telling me, start a YouTube, talk honestly, go hard. Start a YouTube, talk honestly, go hard. And it's like, no, that's scary. I'm just going to go get a job.
Yeah.
And so for a lot of us, you know, we know the thing that God is calling us to do or has given us skill at, and we're avoiding it. It's almost like we're afraid of failing or afraid of like, I know God has given me this talent, but if I lose it, man, he's going to be mad at me. So I'm going to bury this talent. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's a wicked servant, right? Yeah. I was being a wicked servant. And so for me, it's like, all right, I've got to go do the thing, unbury the talent, my little one talent. Cause that's the other thing. We start comparing ourselves, right? We look at a guy like Donald, who's got a billion talents, and you're like, I've just got one. And Donald's got a billion. Like it's no use. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, no, no. You've got your one talent, be a faithful man, go crush, at a one talent scale, and God will give you more, you know? Yeah. And he'll say, well done, my good and faithful servant. Like, you crashed with your one talent. Here's more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you could actually talk about, you brought it up in a couple of your videos, that idea of finding the balance between, I think you just call it, you know, comfortability and confidence, or, you know, that overlap. Maybe talk about that and how guys can just, you know, how that can be helpful for a guy, you know, seeking this.
Yeah. I think for a lot of us guys, we struggle with confidence. As far as an insecurity of failure, right? So there's a great proverb that says, by humility and fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. You know, those are the three things that every man, saved or sinner, wants, is riches, honor, and life.
Right.
And so the Bible gives us the two ingredients, humility and fear of the Lord. So humility is not thinking that you're above God, which is pride, or not thinking that you're unsavable by Christ, which is condemnation, right? Mm. Humility is, I am a son of God. Jesus is the king. I am a king that he is king of. That is humility of, like, all right, Lord, you've given me a talent. I'm going to go use it. Now that's terrifying, because you have to now go and be a man, which is go and make attempts. Mm. Go and you know, it's that whole thing of like, well, how do I get married? Go talk to a girl. What if she rejects me? It's like, welcome to being a man. You know, it's like, we have to get through the terror barrier of giving our gift. So comfort is like, okay, you know, for a lot of us, even we went and did it once. Like, we went and asked the girl out. All right, great. Now we have a girlfriend. Or we went and applied for the job. Great. Now we have a job. And so we were like, okay, great. Like, I expanded my territory of confidence to just enough to there. And now I'm just going to maintain, and I'm going to get comfortable, and I'm going to sit here. But comfort is not what we were made for. Mm. You know, as Christians, we were made to be confident, which means I'm going to constantly live on the edge of that comfort and terror line, which is confidence. You know, so terror of like, man, like, I could fail.
Yeah.
Man, people could say something. Man, I don't know how it's going to go. And I think that's what the Lord is pleased with. That's what faith is. You know, faith is just riding that line of terror. You know, one foot in comfort, one foot in terror. And it's like, well done, brother. Like, you're in faith now. You're walking in confidence. And that's what makes men attractive to women, to other men, is confidence. You know, my wife and I, we were just chatting the other day of this whole thing of, what do men find attractive in girls is fit girls, right? So a girl, if you're fit, if you're feminine, you will be attractive to most men.
Yep.
For a guy, if you're confident, which is masculine, you'll be attractive to most girls and to most guys, right? We love, like, confident guys who've got a mission. We're like, hey, he's got something. Like, if I get around him, maybe I'll be confident. Maybe I'll have a mission.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's such a, yeah, confident person, you know, is just magnetic. You want to be around them. You know, you get energy from them, you get inspiration, and and women, that's what they love for sure. But the parable of the talents is so good. I mean, think if someone just dropped 5, 10, 20 grand in your lap, our natural reaction, right, would just to be put it under the mattress. Don't tell anyone, you know, but the Lord gives us all these talents, and he expects us to be risky, you know, the virtue of risk taking.
Yeah.
And it's not
foolishness. Cause I think you've hit on a good point here. To jump both feet into terror is foolishness.
Right.
You know, so to take the $30 and be like, all right, boys, 30 grand of Bitcoin. And it's like, well, are you one foot in what your skill is, your confidence, your comfort? Like, yeah, I've been reading the markets. I've been reading all the dudes who are saying this and that. Okay, I'm going to take one step, mm-hmm. you know, but just the dudes are like, woo, YOLO, jump in with both feet. It's like, and sometimes that can work, you know, mm-hmm. praise God. Some guys, you make a bold move, you go all in, burn the boats, like, good for you.
Yep.
But I think it's that whole thing again of like, it's okay to have one foot in comfort and then one foot in terror. And move steadily in wisdom, you know? And I think a lot of guys, like you say, it's, you know, you get 20 grand and it's like, okay, what do I do with it? So I either just all comfort or just all terror. And it's like, well, maybe there's a middle road of go seek some counsel, go find some wisdom. Am I already doing stuff? You know? So yeah, exactly, bro.
Yeah. I think that's such a good way to gauge life. You know, you should have aspirations and be doing things in your life to where you think, I shouldn't be doing this, or there's no way this is going to work, you know? I think that, you know, cultivates virtue and, faith, like you said, you know, faith for sure. One of the things I really have, I'm really curious about, and I don't know too much about it, but just some of your thoughts on, you know, masculine hierarchies, archetypes, you know, alpha, beta, sigma, delta, all that stuff. Could you just give me a snapshot of that? Because I've heard you bring it up a few times, but to kind of get a full picture would be cool.
Yeah, there's a book by, it's called The Mature Masculine, like the four archetypes of the mature masculine by Robert. It's going to be someone. It's quite a famous book that a lot of guys have heard of. And he breaks down the masculine into four energies or four archetypes. You know, the king, who's, you know, the commander, he delegates, he's very good at conflict, very good at command and authority. People gravitate toward him. Mm-hmm. Then there's the warrior, who's your strong, silent type who gets things done. His superpowers to grind is to just never give up. Mm. You know, it's the backbone of society. And they're very steady, very just men of resolve, yeah. Unmovable. Then there's the lover, which is the people person, the party on legs, you know, it gets along with everybody, gathers people, energizes a crowd, can tell a story, all of that kind of stuff. And then there is the magician, who is kind of mystical, separate from the group, and reveals hidden things and speaks, you know, into the king's ear and has outside revelation. So those four kind of archetypes, this guy in his book says that we should be aiming for maturity in each area. Mm. And that in different situations in life, we are going to take on certain roles.
Yeah.
Then another guy by the name of Vox Day, he's a blogger. He then took this and applied it to something that he calls the social sexual hierarchy, where he says, how do men operate in a hierarchy? And this is great because it's like, I think a lot of personality tests or like archetype things, guys are like, oh yeah, I'm that or I'm that. And like, and all of that is useless if you don't apply it to what purpose? Mm. So that we can understand better how men operate together in a team or a hierarchy or a group towards a mission. And so he says in any mission environment, a church, a business, a sports team, you will have a king, you know, and he's going to be the leader, the visionary, the guy who bears the sword, who kicks people out, who brings people on. He is the authority. Mm. And you'll have the bravos or the lover. And these are the guys, yeah, the party on legs. They're great at leading people, gathering people. A lot of guys in ministry who are your prototypical big man are often a bravo, you know, because they attract crowds. They tell great stories. They are very sensitive to people's emotions. And when the crowd is up, they're up. And when the crowd is down, they're down.
Right.
And then there's the delta, which is the warrior, the strong and steady man, the builder, the man who's just like, hey, man, you handle your crap, I'll handle my crap, and we'll get on just fine. Mm-hmm. That makes every hierarchy that we ever, you know, guys, if a king wants something done, he doesn't go to a bravo, he goes to a delta.
Right.
You know, the delta will get stuff done. He's the guy you go to when stuff needs to get done. Very masterful, a lot of skill. Mm-hmm. Whereas he'll go to the bravos when it comes to the politics and the gathering and the making sure everyone's on board and the everything's feeling great.
Yeah.
Then outside the hierarchy is the Sigma, which is the magician archetype. And they are outside the hierarchy for the reason being that they don't care to please, to carry the expected norms, you know? So these will be guys who are the maverick or whatever of now, this doesn't suit me. I don't need your approval. I'm here because it suits me. And if it doesn't suit me, I'm happy to get out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they bring a great perspective because they're not beholden to all of the fear of man and the fear of approval. They can bring a lot of great innovation, a lot of great different ways to do things, and a lot of strength that comes with someone who's not tethered to other people's approval. You know, so that's your kind of Steve Jobs, kind of Elon Musk-y type guy, just as a great exaggerated of this archetype of dudes who just couldn't care less. They've mm-hmm. got an innovation to bring. So that's kind of the how that works. And then for the hierarchy side, there's a book by a chap, Jack Donovan, called The Way of Men, which I highly recommend. Short read, you'll finish it in about 2-3 hours. Mm. But he talks about how men size each other up in a hierarchy is through strength, mastery, and courage. So if you have these three you know, if you're a super masterful man, you'll have more honor amongst the men in your group. Mm. If you're a very strong man, and that can be strength physically, it can be strength money, strength of character, strength of personality, strength of, you know, there's many different ways of strength, spiritual strength. Again, the men around you will be like, he is stronger than me. He is more masterful than me. I give him due honor.
Yeah.
And then with that is courage, right? Bravery. And so what he says with these is no one likes an incompetent man. No one likes a coward. And no one likes a weak man. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's how you gauge each other. Men size each other up. And this is offensive to our clown world, liberal worldview of equality.
Yeah.
You know, every man should be president. Everyone can be an astronaut. And it's like, no, statistically, one in 20 billion will be an astronaut. One in 20 billion will be a president. You're not it. You know, of like, we must give due honor to the men who are more strength, more strong, more courageous, more masterful. And likewise, we then have a path of, wow, I can increase my strength. You know, the Bible says a wise man increases strength. You know, it says a man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men. You know, so you can increase your skill, increase your mastery, increase your courage, right? You know, the Bible says, do not be afraid. I am with you. It's the fear of the Lord makes you courageous. And other men are gravitate to you and give you honor in a hierarchy.
Yeah. I love that. Just those virtues, you know, by themselves, strength, mastery, and courage are great. But I like how you have, whether it's, you know, Donovan or you, you know, that is what honor is. You know, honor is something that, because we don't necessarily live in an honor culture, we don't know how to recognize it. We don't know how to give it, you know, but focusing on those things, like you said, gives you a pathway of,
And why do we want honor? Because a lot of guys are like, oh, Scott, that's arrogant.
Yeah.
Or you're full of pride. You know, Jesus was a humble man. Mm-hmm. It's like, Jesus was the top of his hierarchy, brother. Like, yeah. You know, he had 12 men who would give their lives for him. He had 7,000 men following him around the desert. Like, he very much understood hierarchy. And so why do we want honor? Because I put it this way. If you are in a government job, if you're in a business, if you're in media, if you're in a ministry position, and you believe that I'm God's guy, that I have got a gift that I should not bury and give, the way to give your gift is to be elevated in honor to be able to give the gift freely. So you see that with Joseph, right? Joseph is a slave. He's in the prison. It's the worst. He's the worst of the worst, the scum of the scum. But his gift is administration. His gift is biblical wisdom through administration. He was born to crush in government.
Yeah.
But what does he do? He gives his gift where he's at the honor level that he has. The honor level he has was slave master of the house, then slave master of the prison. Like, that's all he had. But he gave everything in that place. And then boom, there's a reaching down. His gift makes room for him. And he steps into a higher honor. And he does that to the glory of God.
Yeah.
Same with David, right? David, backside of the desert, lowest forgotten son, sheep. Everyone else is out being glory boys, fighting a war. He's stuck on the backside of the desert, not knowing what's going on. And it's like, be a man of honor in the backside of the desert with a little bit of sheep. You know, he almost gives his life to protect them from a lion, protect them from a bear. He's displaying kingship over sheep in the back of a desert with no one watching. And God, that honor elevates him. And he now gets an opportunity in front of Saul to then become even more honored.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's it for us as Christians, is like, we want honor because that's how we give our gift to even more people. That's how we give even more glory to God. You know, when we get a crown, it's not, oh, you arrogant bugger. It's no, this is to the glory of God. Mm. You know, we will all, when we get to heaven, throw our crowns at the feet of Jesus. You know, everything in this life is to the glory of God. And so many of us are like, yeah, well, you're arrogant, and then bury our little talent in the floor, you know? And when they get to heaven, it's going to be like, you wicked servant, you didn't do anything.
Yeah. And how they accuse you of being arrogant, but how arrogant is it to the Lord? You know, he's the one who's given you this stuff. You know, he's given you the talents. He's the one who's, you know, created you. He's the one who calls you a son, a priest king. And you're going to say, no, I'm not worthy of that. You know, you know, he's the one who said it. So you should probably listen to him.
So good, bro.
Yeah. Scott, will you should just talk to us a little bit about, you know, the importance of localism. You know, you kind of have a phrase, loving your people and your place.
Yeah.
And why that's important, and maybe contrast that to what we're being sold in the media and just the liberal machine.
Yeah.
aspect is important, not only, you know, as just people living in this country, but as Christians. You know, a lot of Christians, I don't think, see the importance of that. And like we were talking about before, I didn't really see the importance of it until, you know, really 2020 was the catalyst. But why are those things important?
Yeah, as Christian men, you know, everyone has been berated. Again, here's a little catchphrase that we're all brainwashed with: love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and what does it mean to love your neighbor? You know, for a lot of guys, it's this whole thing of like, well, I'm going to send, you know, oh, there's a little African boy with a fly on his lip, send $5 a month. Like, yeah. I'm doing my part.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, you know, your neighbor is in despair or is going through heartache or is poor or is angry or is resentful. And it's like, there's so much as Christian men that we can do for our neighbors who are right here in front of us. You know, if you can love, if you can love your neighbor who you can see, it's like now you can love God who you can't see. And so for us, we've been so taught as well. I'm not sure if it's the same for everyone listening, but in my charismatic upbringing, if you don't go out and lead 5 people to the Lord, you're not being a Christian, you know? Yeah. And if you don't, you were in an elevator with 3 people. Did you preach the gospel to them?
Yeah.
You know, or like, I'm a mechanic, but to be a mechanic to the glory of God, did you put a Christian bumper sticker on their car before it drove out? You know, like guys, just relax, like take off all the pressure, take off all this almost religion around what it means to love our neighbor, and get back to practical. Get back to practical things of what does it mean to be a good neighbor? You know, for me, being a good neighbor is like, man, I don't like it when guys' music is blaring at 10 p.m. at night and their yard is dirty and it smells and their dog is coming over and peeing on my grass and they have a car that screeches up and down. It's like, man, that neighbor sucks. And it's like, that is a practical way of not loving your neighbor.
Yeah.
So what does practical mean? It means like, man, how can I make my neighbor's life easier? How can I make my neighbor's life better? You know, can I greet them? Can I just encourage them? Can I be like, hey man, it's nice to be your neighbor? Or like, oh, I see you've got a problem with this. Like, man, could you help me out? And forming a relationship and being neighborly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a lot of us, we're so atomized. We're so rootless in this modern global clown world. You know, we've moved every year for the last 10 years in a new job and a new place and new neighbors, new apartment block. We don't even know our neighbors' names. And so it becomes very impossible to actually have neighborliness when we're so atomized. And then everything becomes on our phone of like, well, my 5 friends are on my phone and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was reading a guy by the name of Wendell Berry. He's an author out of Kentucky who's, you know, he's all into agrarian, rural living. And he was basically just saying, you know, property ownership, property stewardship of creation is one way of blessing your neighbors. You know, if you make your property value go up and it's beautiful and you love to live there, well, guess what? The 4 properties around you are going to be like, wow, that's really nice. We should do the same, or we really enjoy it too. And so what happens with us as Christians called to be stewards of creation, called to be good property managers, called to be lovers of our neighbors, is that we start creating places that people love to live in. We start creating places that are peaceful. We start creating places that are prosperous and people like to live there. That is then the opportunity of being like, why is this man different? And it's like, it's because Jesus Christ loves me and man, he loves you. And if you'd like to, you know, if you'd like to let go of your resentment and your anger and your despair, like, dude, let's be friends. I'll help you out and how to do this. That's a great way of discipleship and reaching people, not through putting tracts in their hand and pushing the Bible down them and all that stuff. So globalism is what the liberal worldview is this thing of like, how do we destroy small town Americana? How do we destroy culture? How do we destroy Christendom, right? Which is the image of God on earth amongst families and then families in tribes or communities. How do we destroy that so that we can have movable cogs that just fit in everywhere and that we can exploit and degrade? And then the same with land, you know, how can we just exploit the land? How can we just, you know, cut down all the trees, dig out all the coal, pump all the waste back into the river, make a huge landfill. It's like, they don't care because the land is not theirs. They don't live there. They live somewhere else in Manhattan or in Beverly Hills, you know? And so for us, it's like, wow, like as a localist, we should want local ownership of our economy. We don't want outsiders who are coming in to exploit and to just take. We want local guys who live there and take care of it. You know, so the way I contrast this is like with, for instance, Walmart or Kroger or Home Depot or Starbucks. Take your pick of any of these franchise global chains. They will put them up in a huge strip mall outside your little town. And it'll just suck all the little mom and pop shop business to these four or five big businesses. And these are your neighbors. These are people who live in your town who are no longer able to run a little hardware store, a little grocery store, a little coffee shop, a little burger joint. Because the big global businesses, you can't compete with their price points. Mm-hmm. You can't compete with Walmart going over to China, getting 22 boatloads of stuff at 1/10 the price. You know, meanwhile, you've got one shop and you have to buy everything at full price. Yeah. And you're hopefully even making it here in America. And it's like, you can't compete with price. So then everyone's like, oh, your burgers are $10. McDonald's is only $4. Mm-hmm. We're going to McDonald's. And it's like, no, you're also destroying your town and you're not loving your neighbor.
Yeah.
You know, so the way my wife and I look at it, to go and shop at the local burger joint, to go shop at the local hardware store, to go shop at the local grocery store, coffee shop, it's often going to be 20, 30% more expensive. And we chalk that up to generosity. Mm. You know, we chalk that up to loving our neighbor.
Great, yeah.
So when you go and bless that lady who owns the coffee shop, she's part of your town. Like, she hires the little teenagers that are part of your town. And it's like, wow, this is great. Our money is going to our people.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to McDonald's or Starbucks, yes, you know, your neighbor gets paid 10 bucks an hour, but the rest of that money just gets sucked into the logistics funnel, which is global. You know, so all the money goes out. It's foreign beef, it's foreign bread, it's foreign coffee, it's foreign wood, it's foreign everything. So all the money just gets sucked right out of your community. And you know, the guys who are struggling are your neighbors.
Yeah. And that's so good. I think it was Chesterton, maybe not. I don't know who said this, but basically, you know, people want us to love humanity, but no one in particular.
So good.
We have to love, you know, person from the other side of the globe, but we can't, it's like look down upon you if you love a particular type of person.
Yeah.
Localism. I mean, like I said, 2020 really helped me see the importance of, you know, localism, just relying on each other, you know?
Yeah.
Gosh, just going to work every day, just seeing the long line at the coffee, at the Starbucks just irks me. Because first of all, you know, here in our little town, we have two or three other coffee shops that are objectively better, just better quality, better taste. But you know that that money is going straight into their pockets, you know, buying, you know, Christmas gifts or T-ball practice or whatever the case is. You know? And I love that you said it. It really is generosity. You know, it's a sacrifice, you know, out of your own means to bless this person. I mean, how awesome is that? That's great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's awesome, bro.
Yeah. So I think that's so important, bringing back a sense of the local over the global. Yeah.
And I think that's the other thing, you know, is how can you expect other people to love your property if you don't love your property?
Yeah.
You know, so many Christians are like, oh, it's all going to burn, brother.
Yeah.
You know, nothing really matters. It's like, yeah, that's fine. Maybe it will all burn. But for our lifetime, like, I don't want to be in it while it's burning, you know? And it's like, you're going to throw up some strip mall and some suburban, you know, sprawling, you know, just box McMansions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, guys, come on, let's build nice houses again. Let's build nice church buildings again. Let's build nice main streets again. Like, you know, you look at Hallmark movies. Why is Hallmark such a trope? Why are Hallmarks like make you feel great? And it's like, because it's always in some little Vermont town that was built 200 years ago with brick cobblestone streets, beautiful little houses. Everybody knows each other. The town doctor has honor in the hierarchy. And it's like, that's the life we want. We want the trope.
Mm-hmm.
We want Hallmark lives. But then we're not willing to actually go and shop at the Hallmark main street. It's like, no, I'll still go to Walmart.
Amazon. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazon. Yep.
Yep. Absolutely. We could talk about that forever. You know, the post mills related to that, you know, building something that's going to last, taking dominion and all that is just, it's so connected. But I guess to kind of start to wrap things up, you know, just to get the lay of the land in America, 2020, you know, we got massive debt in the trillions of dollars. You know, we have a struggling economy. We have all this COVID crap that's happened. You know, we have, you know, sexual confusion. We have the reversal of God's created order, you know, and you've mentioned before on your videos that, you know, we shouldn't necessarily expect America to explode overnight.
Yeah.
Kind of need to be ready for the slow death, the slow end of civilization. You know, so how do you see things playing out over the next year, 5 years, and stuff like that? And how do we, you know, not only survive as believers, but how do we thrive?
Yeah.
The opportunities before us that we can, you know, be a witness to Christ, but also live the good life. What do you see? What are you seeing?
Yeah, I'm incredibly hopeful. I am. Number one, we're not victims. You know, I think for a lot of people, they're like, oh, just praying for Christ to come back, brother. Just praying for the rapture, or, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, no. Like, this is the most exciting time of all for us. Like, we were given the opportunity, the privilege of being born in such a time as this. Like, God doesn't make mistakes. You're here for this. See this era in history. This is our stage, and with that, you know, God wouldn't leave us here if He also didn't give us the ability to be His image on earth, to take dominion, to extend His kingdom. You know, then it's like God would be a quite a jerk to leave us here as just little crying victims. You know, so it's like I'm incredibly hopeful. I think that there's a rising consciousness of Christian men who understand. If it's going to change, like, why isn't the church doing something? Why isn't God doing something? And it's like, I think guys are finally understanding, like, oh, wait, it's me. Like, God asked me to do something, you know, because if we go to God, like, God, why is all this happening? And he's like, mate, you're my agent down there. You're my guy. Mm-hmm. Go do stuff, mm-hmm. You know, go do the things. So I'm incredibly excited. And how this happens is we've got to change our mindset from political, from big picture, from conceptual, from idealistic, and bring it all the way down to local scale, practical, personal. What is it that I have authority over? So one of the first encouragements I want to give to a lot of American guys, we have to understand that America as a concept is unsavable. It's uncontrollable. You know, us going and voting harder, mm-hmm. It's not going to do anything, mm-hmm. Right? Still go and vote, but understand that our energy is being, it's a meme almost, like it's a psyop. We've been diverted from actually being kings in our local area to just being spectators in the political realm on the global level.
Yeah.
But for a lot of guys, I want to say this, treat your hometown like Washington, DC. Treat your hometown like Israel, like China. You know, we're so caught up, oh, Washington, DC, oh, China, oh, Israel. It's like, no. Your small town, you know,
really?
Let's get so pumped about our small town, about my, you know, who's the president of America? It's like, no. Who's the mayor of your hometown? Who's the sheriff? Who's the business owners? Who are the property owners? Who's the church or the churches? Who are the media guys? Like, get so intensely involved in your local area that all this outside noise doesn't even matter. You know, you look at the Amish.
Yes.
They couldn't give a crap about what is going on in the rest of the world. Why? They've got their own property, their own church, their own legal system, their own economy. They just use us. If we want to go spend money on them, they're like, yeah, give us your money.
Right.
And it's like, what a great worldview. What a great, you know, they will float even as the rest of society carries on sinking because they don't identify as big picture Americans, right? Mm-hmm. And now this is hard for a lot of us to hear because we've been brought up as patriotic. We've been brought up of like America, I am American. And it's like, that's fine. But you have to understand that your government has been co-opted. It's no longer yours. Your media has been co-opted. It's no longer yours. Your academia, school system has been co-opted. It's no longer yours. So they want to meme you into thinking that it's yours so that you keep giving them authority.
Mm.
But what you have to understand is that we need to separate from them. We need to stand back like the Amish have done and be like, those are no longer our institutions. We have to build our own. We have to build our own economies. We have to build our own schools. We have to build our own local political machines. We have to build our own media houses. We have to build our own seminaries and we have to understand it's on us in our local area. And that's where life just gets so energizing, mm-hmm. is that, wow, I actually do have a say. I do have a power to act. you know? And so like on your local scale, like if you move to a town of like less than, you know, 10,000 people, your voice is very, you know, that's why we want to gain honor, right? We want to gain honor in our town, in the dominion that we crush at, the domain that we crush at, so that our voice is elevated amongst the 10,000 or the 5,000 or the 3,000, whatever your town is. And it's like, you want to be a leader. You want to be Christ in this place. Mm-hmm. And that's where things just get super exciting. You know, a lot of guys are like, oh man, it's all over. There's a million immigrants a month. There's whatever your doom and gloom story is. And it's like, guys, none of it affects your personal life. None of it affects your family. And none of it affects your local area if you are actively working and actively preparing for your economy to float, your community to float as, you know, clown world happens around you. So I'm just super pumped, man. I'm excited.
That's great, man. That's great. I love it. Yeah. You hear so much doom and gloom, but just like you said, I'm hopeful. That's awesome, man. I love it. That's how it should be. So that's great.
And I think as well, like the idols of this current age are going to burn themselves out and eat themselves.
Yep, I think so too.
Because a lot of guys, you know, they're like, university is still an idol. Becoming a million bajillionaire is still an idol. Having travel and, this whole millennial life is still an idol for a lot of guys. Whereas I think for a lot of us, we're really coming back to this place of like, whoa, like, those aren't the things that are important in life. Mm-hmm. Like, praise God if you get to travel. Praise God if you become a bazillionaire. Praise God if you go to university. But those things are no longer an indicator of success.
Right.
They're no longer an indicator of meaning and belonging and purpose. You know, there's a new mission rising. There's a new kind of culture that is rising amongst men of like, okay, we're trying to build our own civilization. We're trying to build our own tribe again. This is what's energizing. And this is what gives meaning and belonging to life again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny, just reflecting on that a little bit. I think, myself and some of my friends and you, and probably some of the people you know too, they would probably, have a more similar worldview with like their grandparents or great grandparents, you know, as opposed to like their boomer grandparents or, you know, the next generation, where it's like, you know, status, climb up the corporate ladder, save, you know, retirement, 401k, you know, to where I think a lot of guys I've talked to, it's, you know, they hate that.
Yeah, they just don't care anymore.
And in some sense.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see that. Well, awesome, man. Well, like I said, when we were talking before, I think men need, you know, an example to look out to and then an inspiration to look up to. So Scott, if you could just kind of hold yourself up as an example and as an inspiration to myself and other men, why don't you do that? I know it's kind of uncomfortable talking about yourself, but tell us about yourself and just an example and give us an inspiration through your life.
Yeah, man. I'm sure a lot of us have had that talk at high school where they roll out an old drug dealer or a guy who got sent to prison.
Right.
And he has this whole speech of like, yeah, guys, I shot a guy, I got drunk. Mm-hmm. I did drugs. Mm-hmm. I got 10 girls pregnant. I went to prison. Don't do that. And everyone's like, whoa, that's amazing. Like, yes, I will not do that.
Yeah.
My wife and I kind of look at our lives the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't exactly given the best tools to come into a successful, biblical, wise life. Mm-hmm. You know, and so now here we are at 30 trying to recover so much lost ground, like, you know, almost parenting ourselves into adulthood at the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest thing is, number one, look at my life. Don't do the things that I did that were foolish.
Yeah.
And we've actually managed to carve out a bunch of things that are like, oh, this is pretty good. Like, we've turned our life around. We've got some great things going. And so I think for me, you know, you'll see that on our YouTube channel we do together, on our Twitter and on my wife's Instagram. Our whole thing is giving a positive vision for marriage. You know, for both of us, we wish, like, my wife and I got married at 25. It's like, guys, get married young, have children. Like, we wish that we were told, like, get married and start having babies. They're a blessing. And it's like, no one told us that. And here we are at 30, like, you know, dealing with our own health journey and, you know, praying for kids. And we're hopeful. We're not victims. You know, we're hopeful that the Lord will bless us with children.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we can go back and say to 18-year-old girls, don't wait. Like,
yeah,
once you get married, have as many children as you can. They're a blessing. Like, yeah, this is status for a young lady.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and same for young guys. Like, I would say to young guys, like, don't blow your money dating around a ton of girls. Like, crush, go work, just be a man with single-minded on your mission. You need a mission, not a girl. And mm-hmm. when you're doing your mission, the right helpmeet will come along and you'll be like, yeah, this girl is right for my helpmeet. And then boom, you get married, you have a family, and you carry on crushing even harder because you've got a helpmeet.
Yeah.
And you've got an engine, you know? And it's like, I think that's just my whole thing, man, is like, there is so much an amazing pattern that God has laid out for us to live in life. You know, get married, crush, have a mission, have purpose, have friends with men who are crushing and have a purpose. And it's like, my whole thing is I want to show that and have a positive vision for guys who are doing that. Mm. And likewise, for all the guys who are like, man, it's too late for me. It's like, no. Repent. Jesus Christ will take you from your prison. He'll take you from your desert. And he will start making of your life a great mission and a great testimony. And even if it's, you know, even if we do, you know, I had to overcome a lot of resentment and a lot of grief and a lot of regret. And it's like, I've given all of that over to Jesus. And now we live in full faith. You know, it's like there's no going back. There's no redo. It's like full faith. We're going hard.
Yeah.
And so that's what I just want to encourage a lot of guys, is it's not too late. And also, like, don't listen to Clown World. What are the positive visions of the dudes around you? And lay hold of those testimonies for your own life.
Amen. Man, that's a great note to end on. Scott, this has been awesome. It's been really fun. If guys are on Twitter, you're on Twitter, maybe give your handle and maybe some other place to find. I got the YouTube channel and maybe some other place to find you.
Yeah, so on Twitter, it's @CourageMyLads, or you can just type in Scott Tunge. I'm sure it'll come up. And then I have a blog where I do some writing, so scotttunge.com. And yeah, it's great to interact with you guys on Twitter. So feel free to DM or you know, jump in the chat on the live stream, whatever. It's really great just to have fellowship, even over the internet, with guys who are like-minded.
Absolutely. Awesome, man. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, brother. God bless you.
All righty.
Thanks for listening. Remember that pursuing virtus is a journey, and it's a road that we are always walking. With new information, it's now time to act. So be wise and take responsibility. Be courageous and do what you need to do today.